Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Sag Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Cavs offseason speculation is just beginning. The Browns quarterback competition will be a storyline through OTAs and minicamp. Don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. Jake Vonnegut with you guys here on Overtime. And the Cavs offseason, definitely something to take a look at. Kobe Altman speaking today. End of the season presser, had a lot to say and to help break it down on where the Cavs go this offseason. Let's head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Covers the team for Fear the Sword. He is Jackson Flickinger, and he joins us now. Jackson, what's going on?
Nothing much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, we got to listen to Kobe sort of break it down today and where he's standing, you know, second apron talk, potentially keeping the core four together, moving them on. I'll just say, from listening to the whole thing as a collective, and you go through and break it down, what was sort of your overall feeling and reaction to Kobe's tone as it was about, you know, the roster potentially moving forward with how it is right now and the idea of keeping it together?
So, like, one of my main takeaways was that I feel like this was the most critical of kind of the team that Altman has been. Like, Altman doesn't talk very often to the media publicly, and he always usually tries to paint a, you know, the glass is half full picture. I remember last year he mentioned, you know, after they let go of J.B. Bickerstaff, that this team won 99 regular season games the last 2 years. He mentioned that, like, numerous times. And this year, obviously, he did mention, you know, injuries were a factor, but he didn't use that as an excuse as to why this team fell flat as they did. And I thought that that was good. You know, that was an encouraging thing to see. And I think that him continuing to talk about how this team needs to be mentally tougher was also something that was refreshing, because sometimes I feel like that's an easy thing to sidestep. But I guess after falling like they did to the Pacers, specifically in game two, you can't really hide from that reality.
So everybody goes through it, and obviously you mentioned Kobe said it. We heard Kenny say it, and people have been talking about it up and down since the end of the playoffs for the Cavs there in the second round against the Pacers. Is that ideal of mental toughness? It's over and over again, to the point where it almost feels like a throwaway statement right now, like where everybody who talks about the Cavs uses it. What does mental toughness actually mean in this context? And is there a way that this team in their current iteration can go through and fix it?
Well, I kind of view mental toughness as being like an intangible that allows you to like overcome adversity that's thrown your way, overcome, make the little plays, have the right focus. Basically, like, I know that we sometimes boil things down to like, he wants it more, or like they're aware. Like, I view mental toughness as that. And I'm not sure if the Cavs, as currently constructed, can overcome that hurdle. It's not something that shows up nicely in, you know, the box score or on a spreadsheet or analytics. You know, like years ago, the Cavs couldn't rebound and they couldn't shoot the three-pointer. It's easy to identify as like, hey, this guy is a good three-point shooter. We need to add him to our team. It's a lot harder to refine that mental toughness part of it. And I don't know if you can with the exact current construction of this team. Altman did bring up kind of how going through things like this can make you tougher and give you that edge going forward. That remains to be seen, in my opinion, but that's at least his view of that.
So as we go through and consider those things in sort of an idea, because I also view it as like an intangible, just something you either have it or you don't, right? You're built with it almost in your DNA. Can the Cavs afford with the last three seasons? I think a lot of people would categorize them as sort of a disappointment. Just obviously the Knicks series, playing out the Orlando series the way that it went, and obviously dropping to Indiana this year. Can the Cavs afford to run back the core four, in your opinion?
I think that's a tough question. There's a lot of factors that go into it. I would say, could they have, like, if they brought back 4-4, I think that they could get over the hurdle, but I would prefer for them to move on from somebody like Jared Allen. I think there's some overlapping skills with Mobley there that make it, and then also the mental toughness side. I think he's somebody that you could point to as wanting to move on from, but then it also comes back to what kind of grade can you find. I don't think not an addition by subtraction situation where just moving on from one of the members of the core four is going to magically make things better. So it's a tough question to answer right now without knowing the specifics. I would personally be in favor of them making at least some kind of move to shake things up, but they're not in a position where they should be making a move just to make a move, because with the second apron, every move is harder to make at this point, and also it's harder to like undo a move now that goes wrong. So if you do make a move, you have to nail it.
Jackson Flickinger of Fear the Sword with us here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You mentioned Jarrett Allen. If the Cavs decided they wanted to move on from the core four, or really even beyond that, who in your eyes are sort of the key guys in addition to Jarrett who are on the table?
I think that the guys who would be on the table are guys who have, I would say, movable contracts. So, like, if you wanted to get under the first apron, Isaac Okoro has a good contract to move to do that. Max Strus has a very movable contract. So, I don't know. I don't think Max Strus is somebody that they're necessarily trying to move. But if you are trying to move around the edges, those are some of the contracts that make the most sense to move. We're still really early into the offseason. Not every team is there yet. So it's tough to know what moves are actually out there. But if I were to guess on somebody leaving, just from a perspective of it makes the most sense given their contract situation, I would probably point to Isaac Okoro.
Is Darius Garland in your eyes somebody that's on that table or someone that's not going to be touchable?
I think that moving Darius Garland, I think, is a little more difficult just because of his salary. I think there is an argument to be made that he is a little overpaid. Then if you are looking at somebody who other teams could look at as being overpaid, then getting a return for him is always a lot more difficult. I know that it's been floated like Franz Wagner from Orlando for Darius Garland. And I don't think that makes the Cavs better in any meaningful way. So, and I think those are the type of trades that you would be looking at. So I think it's just a lot harder to make a deal work with him. And then I think there's also the reality that Donovan Mitchell is not a pure point guard. He's not somebody who I think is at his best when he's forced to entirely run an offense on his own. So I think moving on from Darius Garland would be a lot more tricky as opposed to Jared Allen, where you sort of already have that built-in replacement with Evan Mobley there anyways, and you can try to add some different skills that the team doesn't already have. Whereas like Darius Garland, he provides a lot of things that nobody else currently on this team can provide. And if you are trading away Darius Garland for a better version of Darius Garland, why would that other team make that trade to begin with?
Right. I also, you go through and you mentioned the second apron, and Cavs fans should obviously be very deft by the end of this offseason, probably speaking on the second apron, because it's going to be a storyline through at least a portion of this. Hearing Kobe talk today, did you get the impression that that's something that's on the forefront of their mind that they want to handle, or something that you think they'd be comfortable entering next season with the restrictions that are on it and being a team that's over that second apron?
So I don't get the impression that the money side of things or the penalties that, you know, Dan Gilbert would have to pay out for being a second apron team is a concern, but there is a concern about your limited flexibility when you are a second apron team. And I think that's something that they're going to have to consider. And that's where trying to find someone to take on an Isaac Okoro contract could become a more difficult conversation. Figuring out whether you wanted to go deeper into the second apron to pay Ty Jerome, who struggled very much in the playoffs. That's going to be a difficult conversation. So I don't think it's a difficult conversation in the sense of, like, I don't know if the Gilberts want to spend the money, but it is something that if you were to go all in into the second apron, you know, you re-sign Ty Jerome to the max money that he can possibly ask for. You retain Samuel. You're pretty deep in the second apron, and there wouldn't be a lot of easy ways out of that, you know, next summer. So that would just make team building harder down the road. But the longer you stay in the second apron, the harder team building becomes. So that's where it becomes a concern. So if you don't believe in guys like Ty Jerome, Sam Merrill, Isaac Okoro, it would be better off from a team building perspective and from a 2026, 2027 perspective to duck under the second apron now and just kind of play things out and try to reshuffle the deck that way.
Jackson Fligginger, Fear the Sword, with us on the hotline. I want to go back to, you pointed to Jared Allen as somebody that could obviously be moved on from potentially this year. As you look at him and Evan Mobley, is that realistically a pairing that you look at that if the Cavs decided they want to roll back with, that could work on the floor together for a championship level team?
I think the answer is yes, but there's also caveats that go along with it. I think that one of the problems with the Mobley-Allen pairing, it's not in the regular season because their overlapping skills allows them to cover up for each other. There's a reason why they were a 64-win team. But when you look at the playoffs, Allen and Mobley, if they're going to fit well, Allen needs to be providing some of the things that Mobley doesn't provide as well. One of the things I look at is like screen setting. Like, Mobley's not a good screen setter. He needs to improve on that. But if Jared Allen was a Steven Adams level screen setter, a Zubac level screen setter, that would really open up the offense. It would alleviate some of the pressure that the guards feel, especially when they're going against a team like the Pacers that is full court pressing them. So little things like that, being more of a physical presence inside, that's something that if Allen were to do that would alleviate Mobley from doing some of that. So I think that's where some of the friction comes from. It's not from like they can't work, they can never work, or this group could work if you kept rolling it out. It's more so like if Allen doesn't change who he is a little bit, or if Mobley doesn't continue to evolve, it just becomes where they're overlapping strengths and overlapping weaknesses just become sort of redundant and not really helpful in a playoff context where you need as many people as possible who can problem solve in very different ways.
So then we go and we look at Evan Mobley, and it was something that Kobe focused on heavily too, sort of the development of him. And I know Kenny pointed to it. We've heard Donovan talk about it a ton, just how important it is for this team that Evan Mobley continues to take steps forward and grow as a player. As we head into this offseason, what are some of those next steps that you think Evan is capable of taking to become more of a star in the season upcoming?
So he needs to continue to improve his handle. He needs to continue to improve his three-point shot. I have no doubt that he's going to do that. He already talked about doing that. And we've seen the growth that he's taken. I think his next step is he needs to be more assertive. He needs to be somebody who, you know, takes the ball out of Garland's hand, out of Mitchell's hand, and kind of calls his own number. I think that game 5 against the Pacers was a great example of that. He scored five. He had five of his baskets in the first half of game 5 were unassisted. You know, he took the ball up the court. He created for himself at the top of the arc. The Pacers had no way of stopping him. And then in the second half, all of his points besides one were either from offensive rebounds or assists, where he wasn't an active part in the offense. He wasn't like taking control of the offense, taking ownership of the offense. He was just flowing within the offense. And if you have somebody who presents as many mismatches as Evan Mobley does, you need him to take over and be more assertive. He said in his post-season, his after-season press conference, that he said he can't go non-existent at times. And I think that's a good way of putting it. He needs to always be out there. He can't fade into the corner. He can't go possessions without touching the ball. He needs to be somebody who is willing and able to continue to just take the ball and, you know, really just beat up the advantages that he has, because the Pacers didn't have an answer for Mobley. Miles Turner couldn't stop him. Siakam couldn't stop him. Obi Toppin couldn't stop him. But if Mobley's not pressing that advantage, then it's not really that useful.
Jackson, I'll get you out of here on this one, because one of the other things that sort of stood out to me was Kobe going through and talking about the playoffs is something that the Cavs lacked playoff experience and they needed to find a way in the future to get healthy. Is that a valid excuse for this team, or is, you know, playoff experience already there and injuries just a part of the game?
I feel like injuries are just part of the game. It seemed like the Cavs did everything right in order to be healthy for the playoffs. They limited minutes, they extended their rotation, they tried to ramp up the rotation at the end of the season, and the injuries just sort of happened. Like, I don't know what you can do to prevent the DeAndre Hunter injury with his thumb. I don't know what you do to prevent Darius Garland injuring his toe. Those are things that I feel like you can't avoid. But so those injuries all are a reason why they lost and got bounced in the second round of the playoffs. But it's also not the only reason, because if you are a 64-win team, it's because you are good at multiple things and you aren't over-reliant on one player or two players. It's because your style of play can translate over and beat a wide variety of teams. And that, you know, style of play should have been enough to translate over. You know, we keep going back to game two, where the Cavs threw away a 7-point lead in the last 40 seconds. In that game, they didn't have Evan Mobley or Darius Garland, two of the three best players. And they still should have won that game comfortably. So that's where I think using injuries as a total excuse for what happened is disingenuous, but it also can't be ignored either. So I'm not sure how that improves going forward. You just have to get lucky, and, you know, does come down to luck to a certain degree. You have to get lucky to win a championship.
Jackson, really good stuff as always. This Cavs offseason is going to be a puzzle to navigate. So I'm sure we'll continue to talk as the Cavs consider the options that they have on the table. And I look forward to it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.